This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 357. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Brandon Schultz, are you prepared to participate in the new game show that is sweeping the nation? It's called the Seahawks Blame Game. Step right up, put in your bid. Who do you blame? Because I feel like that's where we are at this point.
Yeah, there's a lot of blame to go around. The thing is that there's so much blame that you can point your finger at just about anybody, and you can be at least partially right. So, hey, this is great.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of fun to have these discussions. And look, I mean, 3-8, I think it's time, and we've kind of been talking about it for a while, but we officially suck. We suck. This team sucks right now, and there's just no other way to put it. And I feel like maybe the coaches and the players are starting to actually speak that way too, and actually acknowledging the situation that they've put themselves in.
It's not good. And I was a little bit concerned though, because I hate that the way that they lost against the football team on Monday Night Football. We all had hope that they were actually going to pull this off. Like I told myself so many times that they were getting blown, because they were getting blown out, essentially, the way that Washington was just running all over the field on them. And I told myself multiple times that I'm stepping away, and I couldn't pull away because they kept just finding ways to stay in the game, even when Washington scores a touchdown and he bobbles the ball right as he's going to the ground, like ever so slight movement of the ball to bounce off of the ground, that it gave them one final chance at a game-winning drive. And what does Russell Wilson do? He picks the time to actually drive down the field and gets the score late. They miss the two-point conversion. And then it's still not over because they recover an onside kick. And then it gets taken away because they lined up incorrectly. Yeah. Did I recap the game well enough? Is that a good summary?
You forgot about one of the worst stretches of officiating I've ever seen in my life. And now when we talk about the blame game.
The end of the second quarter.
End of the second quarter. And when we play the blame game, like there's the blame game for this game, and then there's the blame game for the season. So we're going to speak a little bit about the blame game for this season. I'd say the refs 40%
for the whole season.
No, for this game.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just blaming the refs as a whole for the Seahawks.
Season. No, that's like 99.9% on the Seahawks. Like I definitely don't want to be I hate complaining about calls.
But oh, I know, but they've been really bad this year.
There's been some head scratching ones. It's the succession of one-sided terrible calls all in a row that lead up to a touchdown in a very, very tight game. And again, I guess it only resulted into 5 points for the football team.
Yeah, because 6 points, because you get 6 points for a touchdown.
Okay, then I guess it was a net of four then, because of Rasheem Green's amazing block and run back, which was a lot of fun. But yeah, that was brutal, and obviously a difference in this game. And then I guess at the end of the day, we got to talk about offensive efficiency or lack thereof.
Well, while we're talking about this game in particular, how much of the blame do you put on the offensive scheme? How much of the blame do you put on the offensive line, which was outright terrible? Mm-hmm. They couldn't run the ball at all. The line was so bad. They couldn't really protect Russ very well. And I'm having a hard time finding out where to blame on the offense in particular, because it was so bad in so many different ways. You know, they couldn't scheme it. The entire commentary all game was, oh, they can't get DK Metcalf the ball.
Oh my God. Shut the catfish up, Lewis Riddick. Like I that was one of the more annoying comments that, it seems like he kind of realized like halfway through the third quarter, well, geez Louise, they haven't really targeted DK. Well, I guess, you know, now we have what we're going to talk about for the rest of the game. And then that was all you freaking heard about.
And pointing out where DK was lined up on every single play. And yeah, mm-hmm.
He was on the field.
I don't know when they decide to go. Now, obviously, you got to find ways to get your best player of the football. Well, one of your best players, because Tyler Lockett, he caught a couple passes, not very many, but you see it with Washington. They're able to find ways to get McLaurin the football, ways to get him open, even if that's a guy that you need to focus on.
Yeah, I think this whole idea of you have to find a way to get DK open or find a way to get Tyler. I mean, geez, Davante Adams, they find a way. This is all bullshit. Catfish! Because if you ask me where I place the blame, this is the percentages that I do it in.
Okay.
20% on the scheme, and I'll get to that in a second. 40% on the offensive line, which is a John Schneider problem. And then 40% on Russell, who is, he's just legit bad right now. Like, legit bad. Let's talk about the scheme first. Oh, you can just scheme DK open, like, and that's how you got to do it. The problem isn't that they're not scheming guys open, and you don't need to scheme any particular dude open. Let them double him, and then you have wide open players that can be hit, right?
Right. Yeah.
But the problem with the scheme is that they're trying to work everything outside of the hashes. Like, there's just nothing in the middle of the field, and on the rare opportunity that there is when they run that, you know, middle of the field, kind of medium depth or longer, Russ can't see it. He is not seeing it. He's not looking for it. He won't throw it. And that's not a scheme problem. That's not, they didn't need to scheme DK open more. Russ just needed to hit the catfish wide open dude in the middle of the field. And they didn't need to scheme DK open when you can pick up two third downs by just catfishing hitting Gerald Everett in the numbers on an easy ass throw. Like, this isn't a scheme issue for the most part. Now, the idea that they don't run more in the middle of the field, yeah, that's where I put 20% on that. 40% on the offensive line, because they suck balls in this game. Like, with Damian Lewis out, they were getting so much pressure up the middle. I mean, it was just really tough. It was really tough. And then, the other reason I'll put 20% on the scheme, why aren't we moving the pocket? Where's any of the movement plays? Where are the RPOs? Where are the jet sweeps? Not just scheming DK open, which is the dumbest simple plot point that I could ever think of when it comes to announcing. This is way more than that. There's so many ways to create easy completions for a struggling quarterback, but instead you're going to have him sit back there in the middle of the pocket, which he's never done perfectly well anyways, and expect him to hit guys, you know, all over the field, or at least just outside the numbers. And you're basically playing in the hands of this two deep shell defense. I don't freaking get it. And then on top of all of that, 40% is on Russ, because honestly, I think this is his offense. I think these are his choices. You heard him go to bat for Waldy a week ago, and basically that's the most effusive praise we've ever heard him put on an OC. And I think it's because this offseason, Pete looked at him and said, okay, that's your show. That's your show. And he turned over the reins to him, and this is what we're getting. Russ wants to run everything outside the numbers because that's what he thinks he does best. And we don't do anything to threaten the middle of the field. And then he gets hurt. And now he's got Kurt Warner thumb injury to his catfishing finger. And he's just missing three or four throws per game. And that's the difference, right? They talk about, well, if we just have three or four more third down conversions, the whole game's different. There you go.
Okay, why does his finger only impact him on third down throws, though? Why would that be? It doesn't.
What it
I saw him zip it into Gerald Everett in tight coverage for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm. Right. And where he's been struggling with this accuracy issue with the finger has been almost primarily near the sidelines, about 6 to 7 yards down the field, where he's got to rip it out there. It's that short to, you know, short medium throw that he's trying to put some velocity on it, and he freaking airmails it. Like, that's been the throw that's been giving him problems.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I don't understand. He can put velocity on the football, but why is it just that area where he doesn't have the control? I don't know for sure,
but my guess would be is on that particular style of throw, the control factor that you need to throw it comes from that finger. You can work around it on some of the other throws, on the deep balls and some of that other stuff where, you know, it's more your index finger and your thumb. But I'm thinking that's what it is. And then
let's get Matt Hasselbeck on the show. I need to know what a quarterback's index finger has to do with missing that particular throw, or Hugh Millen, one of these guys who played quarterback.
But it's clear that that's the issue. I mean, there's no other way to explain it.
Yeah, it's that throw that he seems to have the problem with right now. But, you know, I've seen him miss those throws in the past, too.
Not with this kind of consistency. 3 to 4 a game. We've seen 3 or 4 a game. And yeah. I know you've tried to oh, it's not. I put it more on other things than Russ's finger, blah, blah, blah. You've been doing that for weeks since he came back. He's missed 3 to 4 throws.
Yeah, well, he came back early. I'm not saying that. I just don't know if it'll be a long-term issue because I see him make these other throws. So that's why it's so confusing to me.
Yeah. Well, the other problem here is that when he does check it down, especially on second down in this game, for whatever reason, he had one nice little throw out to Eskridge out on the sideline. And all Eskridge has to do is just turn up field and get the first down. And he pitter-patters his feet and drifts out of freaking bounds and ends up a yard short. Then it's a sweet play to freaking DJ Dallas of all
catfish
and people. And that comes up short. And then you got Dallas earlier on in the game on a second down. Russ hits him on a swing pass out of the backfield. And what does Dallas do? Does he just put a foot in the ground and go for it? No, he dances around like he's Barry
catfishing
Sanders when he's DJ Dallas. And he ends up, you know, picking up a half a yard. And when there was 5 yards there, like they do this to themselves. And I've seen the receivers do this all the freaking time. Like they catch the ball and then they try being, like I said, Barry Sanders, like juke people out of their shoes, just go forward.
And see, this has to be a coaching point then, because so many times you see the receivers catching it just flat footed and then looking to make a move instead of moving as you're catching the ball. And it's weird because you see the Rams do that so effectively. Mm. And I thought that would be something that Shane Waldron would be able to bring to this offense, but it's not showing up.
Well, he has brought it to the offense. The problem is that Russ is late on everything.
Yeah.
He is late on everything. Even the bomb to Tyler.
Right.
Early in the game, right? On the over route. He was open for 4 seconds before Russ threw him the ball.
Yeah, and that hung up there, and I'm really impressed that Tyler caught that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a touchdown. That's a touchdown if Russ throws it on time. And that's the problem, is he's so indecisive about what he wants to do. And it shows up even on the last drive of the game where he drives him all the way down the field when he takes that stupid sack, which they overcame.
Oh, yeah.
But what are we doing? Like, at some point, Russ, throw the ball away. Like, he's got to be more decisive. He's got to trust himself. And that's where I put some of it on Pete, because I think it's Pete in his ear with the turnover thing, and he's just got him terrified since the end of last year.
Yeah, Pete is focused on turnovers. He's focused on explosives. Even after this game, he was still, I was listening to him on the Pete Carroll Show on 710 ESPN, and he was hung up on the fact that, or at least somewhat proud of the fact that they out-explosived the football team.
It was pretty clear. You could see how they were able to play against us. They dinked the ball around a little bit. They had three explosive plays in the game. You know, out of all those plays, we had 4 out of those few plays. You know, and they were able to run the football with enough to keep it going. They averaged 3.5 yards a carry, which we would think was not a successful night of running the football. You know, but because of the opportunities, I think they showed you that's what we're kind of used to seeing, and it's a good winning formula. But man, the margin was really slight the way it went.
We have our winning formula. We had 4 explosives. They had 3. We didn't turn the football over. Da 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 da.
So part of that is a defensive conversation, right? And while watching the game, I was so mad at the defense yet again because of, you know, just the bend but don't break stuff and all that. But then they started, you know, getting those stops, right? And they got the ball back to the offense multiple times.
Washington fans were furious at their offensive coordinator because they kept running on 3rd and short and the Seahawks defense was stuffing them in the second half.
Right, right. So I definitely get more emotional during the game and have different thoughts than I do when we finally come to the podcast, right? Like there's a moment of reflection. And honestly, like if we're looking at this team as a season, you know, overall, for the most part, except for the first couple games, this defense is playing winning NFL caliber defense. And it's the style of the NFL right now defensively. And I know it looks ugly and I know we hate it. And I know that the time of possession is all wonky, but that's honestly not on them in a lot of ways. It is in some ways, but not all of them. They still need to, especially if the offense was moving the ball with some regularity, you know, game in, game out, then I'd put 0% of the time of possession thing on the defense, because honestly, like, they're playing the bend but don't break, and they really don't break for the most part. They really don't. The amount of points they're giving up are very few, and that's as good as you can play defensively in the NFL these days with these rules. Now, if your offense is broken like it is now, this is where I have a problem with coaching. Why is it that every single first down, we rush four, play too high, and, you know, medium soft zone underneath? Because that was the most maddening thing in this game, and it has been all season. If I'm an offensive coordinator and I want to start a drive against the Seattle Seahawks, you know what I do? I run all my receivers deep. I don't care what they do. They can run overs. They can run crossers. They can run nine rounds. I don't give a catfish. Just run all the way down the field. Just run, run.
Yeah, that push way the defense back, is occupied.
And then I'm going to leak out a tight end or a running back in the middle of the field about 5 yards in front of the offensive line. And I'm going to hit that little dink dunk pass. And I'm going to pick up 9 or maybe 11. Whatever it is. And guess what? Now we're in rhythm. I have a drive starter. It's the easiest play in football right now.
It is, because the person has so much space around them, the receiver does, that the quarterback, and with only 4 guys pressuring and the Seahawks defensive line not getting, well, they got some decent pressure at moments in this game. But on first down, yeah, if you're just rushing 4, you're probably not getting much pressure. So yeah, it makes it an easy way to just drop back, hit your back foot, and hit the check down. And there's going to be no pressure. He's going to have all the time. He'll be able to catch it, then make his turn, and then maybe there'll be a guy there to try and make miss.
Yep. And the other half of it is, too, is they're rushing just the 4 guys, and it's not necessarily the 4 pass rushers that you want on the field. I mean,
oh, yeah, because it's, yeah, because you're talking about Brian Monet in the middle and Al Woods.
Yeah, and you don't have Daryl Taylor out there. You don't have Dunlap out there. You don't have, so what, Green is your best pass rusher in that situation?
Right now, probably.
Right. So that to me is a massive coaching error. Like, I'm tired of that. You even saw the announcers actually got one thing pretty much on the head. There was one point in the, I want to say it was the second quarter, where the Seahawks played tight man. And they snuffed it out. They snuffed out the play. And, you know, oh, look at that. Well, look, when they played up nice and tight and everything, the coverage was good and all that stuff. And then we hardly see it again, when you just need to get them off the field as fast as possible. You need to take more risks defensively. And if the offense was moving the ball more, I would be all about this form of defense. It would totally work. It would totally work. But the offense is totally broken.
The offense is a problem. And I don't have any confidence in that they're going to find a way to fix it.
Well,
I don't know if this I don't know if Pete has any confidence either when I hear him after the game talking this way.
I mean, the film doesn't lie. You know, we're missing some stuff, and I don't see indications of that in practice as we're going. And so we just got to look at the film. You know, we can talk about all the different throws that didn't get where they're supposed to go, but I don't know what to make of it, other than the fact we got to keep battling and keep trying to figure it out. I felt like we had some guys open tonight, you know, with some chances, and unfortunately we didn't hook it up.
And I think people are focusing on the first comment about missing stuff, but then I think the more interesting commentary from Pete is that the throws aren't getting to where they're supposed to go.
Yeah, like, what do you think he means by that? For you, what is that? Well, how does that ring to you?
I think it means that they have plays schemed within the offense that are set up to go to particular players at particular moments. And Russ is either looking for the deeper shots or he's just not seeing it.
He's not seeing it. So I guess kind of what I was wondering is, does that comment to you mean more, hey, guys were open, Russ went to him, but just airmailed it? Or guys are open, Russ isn't seeing it and throwing the ball to area of the field that he shouldn't be?
I think the second one, because in terms of the missing throws, most of the missed throws, they weren't the first read.
I don't know. A couple of those,
a couple of the third down ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So to me,
it could be both.
It could be both. But to me, I thought it was more the idea that it has been schemed up and Russ just isn't seeing it. That's the way that I took that. And I also think that a comment in its entirety was Pete's way of saying, yeah, I heard you all last season. And I let Russ pick whoever he wanted for an OC. And then when they came in, I said, okay, you do it your way. I'd like to run the ball a little bit, you know, just keep us semi-balanced if we can. But for the most part, like, and you guys seem to be on board with that. You guys figure it out from here. Hands off. I'll just take care of the defensive stuff. And while it's been a slow start for 2 years defensively, he's gotten it figured out both years. And Pete's holding up his end of the bargain this season defensively. And Russ in the offense is not holding up theirs.
And that's where I keep getting into this idea of, well, moving forward, do you keep if you have to split this up somehow, you know, do you keep Pete? Do you keep Russ? I hear the Pete Carroll philosophy, and I look at the teams that are having success, and when I hear this from Pete, he's not wrong about how he wants the offense to go.
Look at the illustration that we saw from the other team. They ran the ball 43 times last night, and they averaged 3 yards, 3.5 yards a carry. Well, that gives you the rhythm that allows you to set up the passes and the play passes and the opportunities to make the big plays that are you know, the big guns can make outside. I think it's interesting too that it's kind of coming out. I've heard a couple different commentaries about, you know, there's a lot of teams that are being successful right now, and they're running the football well. Well, there was a time a couple of years ago that, you know, or maybe it's always been the case since we've been here, that people questioned, you know, my commitment to the running game. Well, that's never changed. And it's because the game isn't different in that regard. Oh, everybody's got to throw for 400 yards a game. No, you don't. You got to win, you know, and you got to do the things right so that you have the chance to do that. And the running game is at the heart of all of that for many reasons. We don't need to go into all that, but. I don't think the illustration could be more obvious. And that's, we're always shooting for that kind of balance.
Which is a great philosophy to have, but right now your team cannot execute a run game based on the personnel that you have either, whether it's the guys up front or the guys carrying the football. It's not there.
Yeah, you hit it dead on the head. Number one, he's talking about Washington and their game plan and how it all worked. The most annoying thing about watching that game is we got Seahawked. We got Seahawked in that game. Heinicke looked just like Russ, like back in the day, right?
Oh, slipping out of tackles by, you know, Rasheem Green just slipping under his arms and moving up and running the football. Yeah, it was annoying to watch.
Yeah, a defense that was relatively smothering, a run game that was pretty effective, a spurt of offensive possessions where they get stuffed in the run game on third down, but yet still prevail in a close, low scoring game, right? I mean, we got Seahawks. And then, but to your point, and what you nailed on the head was, yeah, Pete's philosophy, again, I agree with it. And I haven't wavered from that really, but we don't have the personnel right now. Chris Carson might be done forever. Okay. Alex Collins is a good number two, but then what? Your craptastic draft pick and Penny hasn't panned out. You didn't bring back Carlos Hyde. Like, there's guys out there. You didn't bring in Mark Ingram. Like, if you really wanted to play that way, then okay, you got to invest there. And then that's not to mention the offensive line. I mean, somebody on Field Goals did a thing looking back on the last few draft picks and stuff, or especially at the top of the draft order. And I mean, just this last year, D. Eskridge or the center for the Chiefs. Humphrey. Yep. I mean, and I remember at the time being like, oh man, that's disappointing. I mean, D looks exciting and all, but you know, the center of our line is the biggest problem. You got to invest there. If you want to play that way, then pick that way.
Absolutely. That part of the philosophy seems off.
The other part of that comment that I really wanted to get to.
Yeah.
Is like, well, yeah, you run the ball. That sets up the big shots downfield for the big guns on the outside. Doesn't have to be that way. There's another way to play football. There really is. There really is. It's called West Coast football. It's called New England Patriot football. What? Look at Mac Jones and the way that he plays, the way that Tom Brady plays. they have a run game, absolutely. And then they also have a run game in the short passing game, just like Bill Walsh always talked about, just like Montana built a Hall of Fame career checking it down to Roger freaking Craig. There's ways to continue that part of the game.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't have to be drop back for a bomb or hand it off and run it up the middle.
Seems to be no intermediate when it comes to that philosophy. So that is part of the Pete philosophy that does kind of get to me a little bit. Now, there may be some help coming in the running game, Adam. They're bringing in somebody.
Okay.
Here on Wednesday.
Okay.
Adrian Peterson visiting the Seahawks.
All right. I mean, fine. It doesn't matter. It's just so maddening to know that there was opportunities to just have two more wins in the win column, and now you're right in the mix for a wild card spot.
Oh, yeah. Like,
and so now at this point, oh, okay, well, we're finally bringing in AP. Neat.
Why not go after Mark Ingram? Why not go after Philip Lindsay even?
Why not go after, I don't know, about any offensive lineman? I mean,
yeah,
it's the trenches, stupid. Like, that's it. Like, I just want to shake Pete and John and just like, dudes, like, what are we doing?
Well, that was more of an offseason issue. It's hard to build within the trenches once you're into the season.
Yeah. Anti-complimentary football and football decisions. Like, just everything. This team is also just freaking snake bitten. They get the pick on Quandre's amazing hit. That was freaking awesome. That was so much fun to watch. Jamal gets the pick, and then Alex Collins, you know, gets a dump off down the sideline on the ensuing possession, and they're marching it, and the guy just makes an awesome behind. Play and punches it out, and then it goes right to Swain.
And our punt return, the guy who fields our punt returns, it goes right to him,
and he can't get on it.
He can't come up with it.
They muff a punt. The football team muffs a punt. I think it was in the third quarter. Can't get on it.
Nope.
There's just a lot of the tip pass that Rasheem Green had
where
on,
it's spinning sideways.
Yes.
And the receiver,
it's a helicopter ball. Like, that's a pick 8 times out of 10. It's
or at least an incompletion. How do you catch a ball that's spinning like a helicopter?
It's a completion 0.2 times out of 10. And yet somehow still ends up being a completion for a 4-yard gain.
Yeah, that's how you knew. That's at that moment. If you didn't know that it was not the Seahawks night, in that moment, you had to know that it was over.
It's just been that way all year. So the team's a little snake bit. Russ is gun shy. And I think Pete's fed up with it because I honestly do. I think the whole point of his comments in the post-game presser was to say, I turned the reins over to Russ. Here you go. Here's the results.
That's what you took out of that, huh?
Yeah.
I have no reason to dispute it. Now, Bridget, she comes in with a thought and says, now that the season is pretty much over, fan fiction time? I've heard the most criticism nationally about the ridiculously bad offensive scheme and play calling. We know it's more than that, but I was wondering, is Shane the main brain, a double agent for the Lambs, here to sabotage the Hawks? Queen Karma knows and isn't letting them get away with it. That's the only explanation for why their power team has fallen off.
Nice. That's a solid conspiracy theory there.
I do like it.
I do like it.
We need to find more fan fiction ways to fill out the season.
I guess this whole season feels like fiction. You know, but it is where we're at. That's kind of why when we did our season prediction show.
Oh, yeah.
I think I said, you could tell me this team could win 13 games or 3, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Right. I mean, injuries obviously have an impact. I mean, Chris Carson's injury has an impact. Russell Wilson being injured, a big impact.
Well, here's the other fan related question then that I'd like to see where your head's at. Time to put in Geno Smith, the superior of our two quarterbacks.
No, why would you do that? What benefit do you get out of playing Geno at this point? Even if he were to come in and tear it up. Okay. So that, you know, that next year you're going to roll in with Geno at the helm and trade Russ. Is that, Is that the goal with that strategy? What would be the reasoning for going to Geno at this point? I mean, the only real reason is if he's healthier than Russ and you think that he can win you some games to keep you into the playoff hunt. They're out of the playoff hunt. I mean, maybe not technically, but they're out of the playoff hunt. And yeah, I see no upside.
Well, that's because you have eyeballs in a rational brain. Like, I can't understand this. Time to put in Geno. I mean, people freaking out about putting in Geno. That's stupid. I'm just going to put that in a nutshell and just make it real simple. That's freaking stupid. Now I'm going to tell you why. We already know who Geno Smith is. Ask the New York Jets. Ask the New York Giants. Ask Seattle Seahawks in the last, what, those three games that Geno started. Oh, amazing. He had one great game against the Jags. Neat. Neat. And you're telling me that Geno Smith is better than Russell Wilson with a finger that's 70%. And on top of all of that, you were so correct about the idea of what benefit does that get you? Like, Geno's not going to come in and you said, well, what if he even lights it up? And, you know, that makes it so that you roll with Geno next year. That's an impossibility because right. We know who Geno Smith is. There is no upside to putting Geno in. He's not, but he was. Look at his stats. They were showing Geno's stats against Russ's stats since he came back from the finger injury. And guess what? They were damn near identical. So even fully healthy Geno is not a lick better than this version of Russ. So what? Why put him in there? What, to break Russ's confidence even more? To be sure that he leaves Seattle at the end of the year? Is that what your goal is? Because if that's your goal, then maybe putting Geno in isn't stupid. Maybe it's a master stroke of a plan.
Okay, if we want to play out the fiction of Geno coming in and being good enough to, I don't know, win three games down the stretch, he's not under contract next season. So
right.
Even if you see something there, then you're going to have to pay him starting quarterback money for a guy who is pretty average at best.
On a great day, Geno Smith is average, and that's exactly what you want your backup QB to be. And I'm totally fine having Geno Smith be the backup quarterback for when Russ can't go out there, when he physically can't go out there. But when he can, there's no point in putting Geno out there. There's no point in paying him starter money, even if it was Andy Dalton starter money, like that he got for playing for the Bears this year.
Yeah. No, that's like what I mean. The low-end starter money is what...
Not worth it.
Any quarterback would be expected to make.
Not worth it. And so then what? You go into the next year and where you're guaranteed a yet another bad to mediocre, well, probably a mediocre season and a 15th overall pick in the draft. That now you're just middling. Like, I don't understand that philosophy at all. I just don't get the whole Geno's our savior rallying cry. I don't get it. Doesn't make a lick of sense to me. Honestly, I think it's stupid.
The only thing I can think of there is, you know, because it's better to win than lose, and you think that Geno does give you opportunities to win a game, whereas maybe with Russell, you feel like his health isn't there enough to win.
So what's worse? What's worse? Russ at where he's at right now with this injury, or Geno Smith's anti-clutchness? Which is worse? Which one makes it harder to win football games? Because even with all of that just dreck that we saw on offense for the, especially in the second half of this last game, at the end of the game, when it came time for clutchy time, Russell drives us down the field and we score a touchdown and have a chance for a 2-point, and people are killing him on that decision on the 2-point. It was the right read. It was the right throw. If he threw it to the other side of Swain, there would have been more room there for him to make the catch. There's a defender over there, but he was further away than the defender that was on Swain's left. So, but it was the right decision. He was the most open of the receivers. And I know some people are like, oh, he missed two reads. But anyhow, that was super clutch, right? So even with all of the crap that we saw, Russ comes through in the end and gives you a legit chance. And then we've seen Geno, and we know this about him now. Sure, he keeps you in the game and you're right there. And now the ball's in his hands. It's a last minute drive. And oops, it's a fumble. Oops, it's a bad pick. Oops, it's something anti-clutch. And you're telling me Geno's going to win you more games?
So you put in Geno Smith for the first three quarters, and then if you're down, then it's Russell Wilson time.
Sweet. So at that point, you have no quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Because if you have two quarterbacks, you have zero quarterbacks.
I think it's just people trying to find ways to win. I don't necessarily blame anybody for having the thought of wanting to see Geno out there. It's just, it's looking for something different because what we're seeing isn't working.
I don't blame them for having the thought because don't get me wrong. There was a point in the game. I was like, should we just put Geno in for a bit just to see? But the idea that after having that thought, you go, yes, that's the thought. And then double down on it. And then in the comments on the press conference, go in there and type in Geno's name 46 times, you know, or, you know, or during the game in some of our discussion, you know, hey, it's time for Geno. It's time for Geno. And then double and triple down on the Geno thought. Like, that's at that point is where I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I understand having the initial thought, but if you don't find your way out of that thought, like, where's the critical thinking skills?
The other thing that is kind of bugging me about Geno is that he seemed to, his commentary on Twitter. Now, I know Twitter doesn't matter.
Right.
But why is Geno Smith out on Twitter making comments about how great he is?
He's got an ego too. Like, and who cares? That was one of those that I saw the story on that and then the little snippet. And oh, Geno responds to some dude on Twitter about how good or wasn't not good he was during the his time starting. And it's like, who fucking cares? Who cares?
Yeah, it was Maddie Brown said it took Geno Smith roughly three games to shake off the rust and play well at quarterback for the Seahawks. Monday Night Football is Russell Wilson's third game back from injury. And Geno says, no TF, it didn't. I came in hot. They keep trying to drive home false narratives.
Catfish!
Is unreal.
Okay.
He did come in hot, though, in that Rams game. Yeah, he came in so hot that Seahawks fans, we were chanting his name in the game against the Rams. And then he went ice cold for two straight games and then played okay against, you know, one of the worst teams in the league.
Mm-hmm. There you go. There's your sample size of Geno Smith. He was flat out dealing for a drive and a half.
Yeah.
Against the Rams team, which has been showing at this point to not be that good.
They're going downhill kind of quickly. Our next opponent seems to be surging in the San Francisco 49ers.
Well, only because the Vikings are idiots. They had that game.
Oh, yeah. Well, they kept turning the ball over in like the worst possible times.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just like, God, San Francisco is not a good team. They're definitely better than us right now. That's a loss coming up this week. Like, I mean, it's just time to call spades spades. Like, we're losing to the Niners.
I don't know. I'm not willing to accept that because the thing was the Vikings turning it over on their side of the field, giving the Niners short fields to score on. And I think this defense is decent at stopping the run.
Yeah.
And that's the 49ers offense is running the football.
Cool. Can they score 10?
Yeah. Well, we have to be able to score points, but.
Oh, okay. So there we go.
Fred Warner's going to be out this game. Their best linebacker, probably their best player on defense.
Who cares? We wouldn't throw the ball to the middle of the field anyway.
Running back Deebo Samuel is not playing this week. So they're down one of their five running backs.
Yeah, I guess that helps. Just wake me when the offense is a real NFL offense again, and then, you know, I'll let you know that we might win a game. But against a decent team, look, we are who we are. I mean, we're worse than the football team. We're worse than the football team, and they're not good.
Now, here's if 49ers defensive coordinators are listening, all you do is you wait for the Seahawks to be in third down, and it can be, you know, third and past six, and they line up five wide, and then you just run a stunt, and then you sack Russell Wilson on third down. Like, that's the formula for beating the Seahawks offense on third down.
Oh, it's there's not even a formula to it. Just don't let them get a first down on first and second, and then let them be in third down, and then just have them fail. Like, you don't even have to do anything special. Like,
I didn't think that two defenders changing spots in, you know, as the ball is snapped is all that difficult special. Of a, an offensive lineman, move to be able to go, okay, I should block this guy since he's coming this way and not block the guy that was lined up in front of me initially.
you're basically asking guys to do trigonometry out there. Like, it's impossible. That's impossible.
I know. Kyle Fuller, yeah. If you're listening, just pick up one stunt. I challenge you.
Look, it's not Kyle Fuller's fault. It's not his fault. I mean, basically, I want to
rob Williams. Is he a professional offensive lineman?
He's a fringe professional offensive lineman. Like,
I just want one block the entire game where the defense isn't rushing straight at
you. Not where he's supposed to be playing anyways. He's a center.
Yeah.
It's not his fault.
Okay.
Like, I can't blame him personally. Now, I mean, if they offer him a job and he says, sure, I'll take the job. Like, that's not his fault. It's John Schneider's fault for offering him the freaking job.
I suppose.
Or Pete Carroll's, however you want to look at it. All right, so I guess you asked a little bit earlier, like the idea of the split up, right? In the clean house, we're hearing all about that. What do you think? How does that work?
I think we have to look at this from the viewpoint of the people who would be making the decisions. And it's a business decision, mm-hmm. because it's the ownership that ultimately has to make the choice on what to do. One, I think expecting Pete to take over a rebuild, that doesn't seem logical to me. Mm. To have a quarterback, it's about selling tickets, and you have a quarterback in Russell Wilson that you know that he sells tickets over what any other option you might have. And so the business case is, if you're doing anything, you're keeping Russell Wilson.
So I like the way that you started that explanation. And it's like, who is the ones making the decisions, right? Like, who's making the decisions here? Well, everybody just assumes that the Seahawks get to make the decision on whether or not they keep Russ. This offseason, this isn't my own thought. Like, I had kind of come up with it, but I heard Mina Kimes say it earlier today on something she was talking on. And it's kind of up to Russ whether he's back next year. It's not just up to Seattle. People just assume, well, we get to decide whether or not we keep Russ. Yeah, we did last year. It's just different this year. It really is. So it's up to Russ. So then at that point, let's say Russ opts out. What if Russ says, and not that he has an opt out in his contract, but
no,
says, you know what?
We've seen any player can essentially say, I want out and be out.
Sure. And, you know, especially after a season like this, which I think would be a mistake on his part, but hey, whatever. I mean, who knows what his thinking is? We're going to find out. But Russ leaves. Now, what do you do with Pete? You said, I don't see Russ or Pete wanting to be a part of a rebuild in the 70s. That's exactly the type of team that I think Pete would do well with. A team full of young guys where he can do his rah-rah college stuff and play Pete ball and have total control. Like, I don't think it's far-fetched to think that Pete would love to be a part of a rebuild or have the energy for it. Not saying I want that. I'm just saying it's not crazy talk.
I'm not seeing the Pete Carroll energy that I've seen in the past this season. And maybe it's the losing.
Yeah.
But it seems different this year.
So Russ decides he wants out. What do you do with Pete?
I think it depends on who would be out there that, you know, whether it's if you're looking at Pete as a transition type coach at that point, how many more years are you going to, even if it is a rebuild, how many more years are you going to roll with that? And I would struggle with that, I think.
So if Russ decides to leave, you say, go away, Pete. Bye-bye.
If Russ decides to leave, then at that point, yeah, I think if you're getting those draft picks, and we've already talked about how John Schneider has made some questionable moves, then you look toward a new GM potentially and see what that GM wants to do in terms of the coaching decisions or in terms of hiring the coach or keeping Pete.
So getting rid of Schneider too.
I think that is where if Russ goes, then you get rid of Schneider and then you work from there. But generally, a new general manager is probably going to find their own coach.
Sure. But I completely agree with you. If Russ decides to go, I think they can Schneider. I think Pete stays on for another year or two. And that's the way it goes. Now, I would hope that we get to this offseason and Russ says, yeah, I want to stay and be a part of the solution. And we're just going to find out what legacy means to him. And I think that's going to be really, really fascinating. But I hope let's say he stays. If he stays, then I think you have to say Pete goes. And that's not to say that it's going to get better. It might not get better.
Oh, yeah. I think it'll be different, though.
It'll be different. And we're probably there. Yeah, I'm fine with that. But if Russ stays, there's no way Pete stays. I think if Russ goes, I don't think there's any way Pete goes. They're not going to go through that kind of turmoil. We're not the Bengals, right? Like we're closer to the Steelers in terms of coaching stability than we are the Bengals.
What percent chance are you that both Pete and Russ bring it back? They say, hey, we've gone through some tough times. Let's do the thing that ends the story the best way, roll it back and go for this next season and see if we can pull it off.
It's going to depend almost solely on what the offense does for the remaining games on the schedule. If they start to put it together and it's looking pretty good and it's looking pretty good because Russ is hitting the couple throws that he was missing because his finger's better and, you know, he's not as rusty, right? And then also he acquiesces in some control of the scheme and it gets better, you know, to Pete. And they have that kind of come to Jesus. Oh, crap. Like Pete has like, well, I wouldn't be here without Russ. If Russ realizes, oh, I wouldn't have gotten to this point without Pete, then there's a chance. But I don't feel like that's likely. That's like 15%, if I were to put a percentage on.
Well, linebacker 54 with a comment here seems to be thinking along these lines as well. Says, I said from last year's Russ kerfuffle, we either need to part ways from Pete or Russ. I personally love them both, but I like Pete Ball more. Great defense and powerful running game with a low cost clock manager is how we won and almost won a second Super Bowl. Russ is too good for that, and I would love to see him in an Andy Reid style offense, having the career he deserves in a system that Pete cannot provide for Russ. The clash in philosophies between Russ and Pete has led to a mediocre offense, defense, and run game. Something, someone has to give in. In my opinion, we either drop Russ and get back to Seattle defense or build a team around Russ. Sure, teams may score 35 against us, but we will score 38-40.
Yeah, and I mean, linebacker 54 and myself have similar feelings. There's no doubt. I mean, I would much rather be the team that can pound the ball, stop the other team from running, and you know, control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball and let the Taylor Heinekes of the world come in and, you know, take it to the playoffs on the regular and play consistent football. I mean, I can't stand boomer bust football, and I don't know that Russ would thrive in an Andy Reid offense. I mean,
I don't know if he would either. I feel like
he's not a rhythm passer.
I feel like his best game comes from having a strong running game. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that he and Pete would be good together if they, you know, if they have similar philosophies. And I don't know if their philosophies are that different. I mean, based on the offense and how it hasn't changed with multiple offensive coordinators. And like you said, if this is what Russ wants with Shane Waldron as the offensive coordinator, and it hasn't changed all these years, I think that they just are struggling in the run game so badly that the offense can't function.
Oh, they did this game. They've been running the ball fine in the games leading up to this. The running game hasn't been a disaster considering the personnel. Like, it really hasn't. And considering the opportunities, I mean, you get off the field with 5-3 and outs in a row. Like, you know, when are you ever going to establish a running attack? When are you ever going to get into that rhythm? The problem is that Russell wants to be Drew Brees. He wants to play like Drew Brees. And he wants to hold all these passing stats and all this stuff. That's all fine and dandy, but he needs to be Steve Young. They got to use his mobility to their advantage. Like, I don't understand that entire game when the pass rush was getting to Russ, how you're not moving the pocket, how you're not, you know, playing with some RPOs and, you know, some read option and using Russ's legs. He did it once to try to get the offense unstuck. The second he saw man coverage, he tucked it and ran.
Yeah.
Where is that more? Like, why are they just playing that much zone? I wanted to watch all 22 before doing this pod, but it wasn't up yet, unfortunately. So I can't really tell you because I'm really curious.
I would like to see what the percentages are of teams running zone against the Seahawks, because it feels like it's definitely the majority, and it may even be mm-hmm. the vast majority.
Mm-hmm.
They need to have some plays to beat zone defense, because now I'm not seeing any.
Well,
that beat it on the regular.
The problem is that to beat zone defense, you have to throw the ball on time. Like,
and he's not throwing the ball on time.
He's not throwing the ball on time because in man coverage, if DK's got a step, he's got a step for the next 5 seconds, right?
Right.
If you're playing zone and you're trying to hook it up on a quick curl or a slant, that window is only open for a beat, and the ball's got to be there.
Yeah, there is no rhythm to this offense, and
there's no rhythm to Russ's passing attack, and that was Drew Brees. That's Tom Brady. Like, so if that's who Russ wants to be, that's fine. Then be him. But honestly, he's more of a play action quarterback, like, which that is not a slight in any way. He's elite at it. Be elite at what you're elite at.
That's the thing. People have already talked about you, Russ, as being a Hall of Fame talented quarterback with your game the way it is. So why not just be consistent with that? And why try to be something that you're not, essentially?
And again, we'll find out what legacy means to him, because is it, you know, having all those gaudy stats and being the guy who stands in the pocket and throws, you know, darts all day? Or is it being loyal to a fan base that has been loyal to you and be there to through thick and thin and use your strengths? And maybe it's not throwing the ball 45 times. Maybe it's throwing it 30 times. And, you know, 22 of those are with your back to the defense right after the snap of the football. Personally, I would like to think that his legacy in Seattle means more to him than his legacy as an NFL player, like in the view of the national media. But yep, maybe that won't be the case. I don't know. But these next six games, that's what we're watching for.
Yeah, I don't know what to think in terms of legacy. Obviously, majority of players, they end their career somewhere else. There's just not very many examples of guys that go and switch mid-career. Not that Russell's mid-career at this point, turning 33, but I guess there's that potential there. But it's always, once you let a quarterback who is of that caliber go, it's usually you're letting them go because you don't see that same kind of game that they had, and that's why you allow them to leave.
Ideally, or if we're going to be honest, 5 to 7 more years of a good Russell Wilson, a productive Russell Wilson, probably, right?
Maybe. I really don't know.
No,
To tell with NFL quarterbacks anymore. Tom Brady ruined it for every NFL quarterback.
Well, let's think about that too. I mean, everybody's playing longer. All the quarterbacks are playing longer and having, you know, extended success. Now, if this was 15 years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years more.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, being 33 and all that. But yeah, in this day and age, it's going to be a lot longer. I think us as fans, you know, Russ is broken right now. He is legit broken as a quarterback. It's a decision making between the ears, not letting it rip. His feel for the game just isn't there. Like it just everything feels off, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as a fan, I think we owe it to Russ to be like, yes, come back. Like, yes, I believe. Yes, I believe you're going to get this turned around and you can be the quarterback that you've traditionally been and have that loyalty. So it goes both ways. The idea of the trade Russ on this year, short of him being like, I am gone, trade me. You know, if he forces it, fine. But if it's up to the Seahawks, if it's in our hands, he says, yeah, I'll be back. No effing way. We don't trade Russ.
I wonder how that's going to go this offseason.
Oh, that's what Bronco Jared asked me over text there in the middle of the game. And he asked me what my thought. I have no freaking clue.
Because my feel of it is that the stuff in the offseason happens. It's the agent playing games to try and get their client the most money possible. Mm-hmm. And that's what it feels like to me, because if Russ really wanted to go last offseason, what would have stopped them from doing it?
That's why the media talking with this certainty that he is gone this offseason is absolutely laughable. If you think you know that as a fact right now, you might end up being right. But to say that you knew it today, like, get the hell out of here. There, yeah,
and
no
I know
that
the cap people, the people who look at the salary cap go, well, it wouldn't have made sense for the team because the salary cap, they were paying Russell so much money. Teams find a way.
They find a way.
I mean, Brock Osweiler got traded from the Texans after being a dumpster fire of a quarterback to the Browns to take on salary that just so they could take on the draft pick. Like, teams would be willing to make moves. GMs have a way of making that happen.
Absolutely, they do. And so I think, to your point, the idea that if Russ really wanted gone, he'd have been gone this last offseason.
Now, he may want gone this offseason, but yeah, I do think in terms of legacy, and you think of guys like Derek Jeter with him being a Yankees guy, it makes sense to stay in the same city.
I mean, him and Ciara are what the, yeah, they've got to be the biggest celebrities in the entire city, right?
But yeah. And, you know, they can fly down to LA, they can fly over to New York. I mean, it's easy to get
it's
around.
A different day and age. Yeah, this isn't 1963, right? Where, you know, being in southeastern Alaska is a killer to your career.
Aaron Rodgers is in the State Farm commercials and he's in Green Bay. So it's and not like you have to. Yes. So, yeah, you don't even have to be likable or in a big city to get these big deals.
Exactly. Exactly. It's all going to be interesting. And you wonder, why would I put myself through watching this team for the rest of the year? You know, I was talking to DCH quite a bit during the game, just texting back and forth. And yeah, he's taking it hard, you know, and I get it. I do. I mean, during the game, I'm taking it hard too. And it's tough to watch, but these are the things you're going to be watching for. This is why you will watch the rest of the season, to, you know, see if the offense can get their poop in a group, to see if Russell looks like he gets more consistent and healthy, to see if Pete and him seem to get on the same page, to all of that stuff.
Watch the relationship between DK and Russ, and will DK blow up on the sidelines more?
Yeah.
Got to watch for the drama.
I think they were kind of blown out of proportion, his reaction in this last game. It was more that he was having a conversation, being like, hey, man, dude, check this out. I was doing this, and then that happened, and then, like, why'd you end up over there? It wasn't like OBJ, like, screaming at somebody.
No, he was talking to Geno Smith on the sideline saying, man, we need to find a way to get you in the game so you can get me the football. Right. I know that's what had to have been going on there.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Because DK definitely knows that Geno Smith is a better quarterback than Russell Carrington Wilson right now, for sure.
Look, Geno would just throw it up to him in the end zone. He said that was the only pass that he's ever gotten like that, and it was from Geno.
Okay. It's just tough. It's tough being a Seahawks fan right now. It's tough having to eat the, you know, miles of crap that we're having to eat right now from the opposing fan bases and all that. But whatever, man. It's a circle of fandom. It's how it goes. Every so often, this is the way it is. Sorry we dominated for 10 years and have had one down. Yeah. Sorry, not sorry.
It is the cycle of the NFL. Your team generally is not awesome forever.
No, you can't win forever.
But I think beating the 49ers, that would at least, you know, we'd have that.
Get
over
your hopes
them.
Up for that. That's going
to
feel great.
I want that to happen. I'm with Jerv. It says, this is the worst I've seen this team play since the Jim Mora year, and I hate losing. Hope we can show up to sweep San Francisco, but I doubt it. Go Hawks. P.S. Needs in the offseason include running back and big mother truckers at offensive line. That's what Russ needs.
Yes. Yes. It's so funny to hear the national media talk about this, because how many of them say, yeah, they need to draft like every, you know, big drink of water they can find to go out there and just run people over. Like, nobody says that.
No, and it's a little bit frustrating too to watch, you know, guys like Jonathan Taylor have so much success when in that draft where Jordan Brooks, you're thinking, okay, back end of the draft here, you got a guy like Jonathan Taylor. I guess they were just not ready for the Rashad Penny hope that he could return to whatever they expected from him. I feel like they should have known there, and that you could have gotten a game-changing type running back at that spot. Instead of now, Jordan Brooks has been fine.
Brooks is great. I'm really happy with the Brooks pick overall. He really is maturing into a really, really good linebacker, and does a lot of the things that we need a guy out on the edge to do. I think people crush him a little too much. Now, when it comes to Taylor and like, oh, that pick right there. While I'm decent at, you know, looking at the rookie quarterbacks, and I have a decent track record with that. Running back, I am not good at when it comes to the mid-tier to upper-tier running backs.
Yeah.
I have a really hard time, because when I looked at Jonathan Taylor in college, I was like, you could find that guy in the sixth round every year. That turned out to be dead wrong. You know, I mean, he's a special talent.
That was the running back I was dialed in on most out of that group, just looking through the list right now. I didn't like Cam Akers.
Nope. Me neither.
DeAndre Swift, I don't even remember thinking about
him. I don't even remember looking at him. Yeah, so,
I don't know. Yeah. Oh, J.K. Dobbins was the other one, and he would be good, but he's been hurt.
Right. Health is a part of talent. So, yeah, I mean, the running back thing is hit or miss. I guess where the dereliction on duty comes in to the running back position is, sure, okay, great, you got Chris Carson back. That's really cool. But his history is his history. So what do you have behind him? The guy with a worse injury history than him, in Penny. And then you luck into Alex Collins coming back and you can't bring in one more dude. Like, there's five of those dudes on the street right now. Adrian Peterson being one of them.
Or maybe even I was surprised that Josh Johnson didn't get any snaps on offense in this game.
I don't know anything about Josh Johnson. I thought he was a quarterback. Isn't there a Josh Johnson that was a quarterback well?
I think, he might still be a quarterback, you know?
He seems to stick around. There's a blackmail guy. Like, he's got something. Must be on Goodell.
Yeah, he's in New York. He was playing for the Jets.
There you go. Yeah, so when everybody was saying, like, I'd seen you make some comments about Josh Johnson and him not being in the game. I'm like, what are you talking about?
He's the practice squad running back. He's a little bit undersized. He's 5'9", but it
doesn't matter for a running back.
Well, the thing for me is that you brought him up from the practice squad. Give him a carry. Let's at least see him in the backfield. You know what you have in DJ Dallas. You know,
I was going to say, that's gonna cut into DJ Dallas's touches, man. Like, not only that, but then you would take DJ Dallas off the field in pass protection. And you know, you might actually not give up an extra sack or two. Like, you can't have that. You got to give up those sacks. So
he had one play that infuriated me this last game where, again, a guy on the defensive line, they ran a stunt on the right side, and DJ Dallas came out of the backfield. He passed up the defensive lineman that was coming around the outside of Brandon Shell unblocked. Mm-hmm. And he runs as Russell Wilson's rolling out to the right. DJ Dallas runs to the left side of the field.
Yeah.
So you couldn't block that guy, and you're running to a spot where Russell is not going to be able to get you the football.
You're breaking every law of quarterbacking if you throw it back that direction. No, I mean, it's great heady play out of DJ Dallas. So.
Thanks, DJ, for one, not picking up the block and running to where Russell is.
But here's the thing.
Going to have no chance to throw it to you.
Here's the thing. DJ Dallas was what, a sixth round pick?
Fourth?
And you're expecting that guy to be Walter Payton? I don't get it.
No, I'm not expecting Walter Payton things.
Not I'm you. Just... I'm just saying, like, to make great decisions all the time. He's a fourth round draft pick for a reason.
If you can't take a running back in the first or second round and taking it in the sixth is the optimal time, then can't you get a good one in the fourth? Why is this hard?
When
do you take the good running backs?
I wish I could pull up what I had to say about Dallas during the draft, because when they drafted him, I was just like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Like, he's a one trick pony. I don't understand. I don't know.
Because I was told that he would be Terrell Davis.
No, that was Travis Homer, dude. That was Travis Homer. He was the next.
You're confusing this.
I am not. You keep trying to take it back to Dallas. You've done this at least three or four times this season.
I know. Where you try to make it. I'm going to get you eventually. You're going to be like, I'm going to say it enough that you're going to be, oh, yeah. People thought he was going to be Terrell Davis.
You say it with enough confidence too, buddy. Like, do it. Now you've got my whole podcasting technique down.
I'll get there eventually. Yeah. What do you say we get to the second half of the show?
Why not? I'm tired of talking about this team.
I feel like we haven't talked enough about the 49ers, though. Have we done enough of a preview to satisfy the listeners of the show?
What is there to preview? All right, so they can throw the ball to Kittle every now and then. They're a good screen team. They run the ball pretty effectively with anybody who's back there because Shanahan's. And, you know, their defense is fine, not great. Like, what else is there to talk about? They're a mediocre team, which is better than us, but, you know, they're a mediocre football team.
Let's do some fan fiction here. Seahawks beat the 49ers. The 49ers go into a tailspin at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Shanahan gets fired.
Mm-hmm.
Pete decides to retire. Russell Wilson has his choice of offensive coordinator. Do you bring in Kyle Shanahan?
As an OC?
As the coach.
Oh, as the head coach?
Yeah.
No, I mean, well, I guess the question is, do you like winning Super Bowls or losing them? Because if you're into losing them, then you definitely bring in Kyle Shanahan. But if you enjoy winning them, then, you know, maybe you look somewhere else.
He's definitely been on the losing side more than the winning side.
Mm-hmm.
He should have won that Atlanta one. That's why the other argument that gets me is the idea of not being able to pay a quarterback because he makes an arbitrary amount under the salary cap. Like that Russell Wilson makes too much money. It's above this 18% number of the team's salary cap. And no NFL team has won with a quarterback making more than 15% of the salary cap or whatever the number is. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And when that whole narrative would be busted if Kyle Shanahan actually just ran the ball once on a third down when they're past midfield in the third quarter of the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Or if Tom Brady made 1% more over what he's made in the last.
Right.
Because when I look at the Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, it's Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer, you know, future Hall of Famer, Nick Foles, Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer.
Yeah. I mean, you're just not often winning the Super
Bowl. Brad Johnson had an incredible, like, legendary defense. Mm-hmm. And Trent Dilfer had an incredible, legendary defense.
Right. Yeah. So there you go. I guess the only one that I would kind of point to that was similar to those was last Peyton Manning Super Bowl, because he wasn't Peyton Manning anymore.
No, he was still a Hall of Famer at that point.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. But
and great defense.
Amazing defense. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty clear that, yes, you need one of the top dudes, you know, to win a Super Bowl. You just do. I mean, can it happen? Sure, it can happen. With
you can Nick Foles your way to a Super Bowl. It happens once every 40 years.
Even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. Yeah, for sure. But to be consistently in it, yeah, you need one of the dudes. That's why I'm not into trading Russ.
No, because who are you going to get that you're going to have to luck your way into another drafted quarterback? Because you're not going to pick up a guy on the quarterback scrap heap to lead you that way.
So, yeah, you'd either have to find him in the draft, like you said, or you end up with somebody like Matt Stafford, who looks good for 5-6 weeks, the injuries start to pile up, and he starts making the mistakes that have plagued him his entire career, which is still an upgrade over Goff. But you're not going anywhere. Everybody acts so surprised that, oh no, like, what's wrong with McVay and Stafford all of a sudden? I thought their marriage was the holy union of all holy unions, and it was so perfect. Yeah, their Instagram football marriage fell apart real quick.
Yeah, they haven't had much success since bringing on Von Miller and OBJ.
Maybe the football gods have a sense of humor. I don't know.
I think it's pretty funny.
I love it.
Although yeah. It's going to leave the Cardinals as our divisional representative. Whatever, dude.
They can paper tiger their way all the way to the playoffs and a division title. That's fine. Enjoy your first round exit. It's all going to be cool.
Like, that was one of the YouTube comments that we got, is that I don't think we're allowed to call the Cardinals a paper tiger.
I can say whatever I want because I'm a man. I'm 40.
One of the best press conference lines ever.
yeah, for sure. No, but I, like, for real, it's like, I honestly do not believe in this team. This is not a Super Bowl team. If you think it's a Super Bowl team, that's cool, man. You do you. That's like your opinion, man.
Fandom should have anything to do with it, being able to recognize a team that's not going to be successful in the playoffs.
I don't have to be objective about the Arizona dumpster fire Cardinals. I don't. I can sports hate the hell out of them, their entire fan base, their stupid stadium that's built on an Indian burial ground, and everything about it. Their fair weather fans, their stupid dink and dunk offense, their stupid frat boy coach. I can hate them all, and I can talk as much catfish as I want about them. It's fine. And disagree if you'd like. Again, that's like your opinion, man.
That's what makes us fun.
There, did we talk about all the stupid four racket teams?
I think we got them all in.
Oh, I forgot one thing.
Yeah?
Catfish them all. Every last one of them.
I will be a fan of every team that they play if any of them make the playoffs.
Yeah,
for sure. It might be all three of them. Could you imagine?
No.
The Niners aren't making the Niners can't make the playoffs.
That Vikings win is going to help them a lot.
There's not a lot of good NFC teams.
No, it's hard to count on an Eagles team that plays a running back at quarterback and a football team. It's still so
the
weird.
Falcons like, might make the playoffs at this point.
Exactly. Like, if we can't be in the wild card chase, like, we're not even, somebody had put in the Ring of Honor, it's like, it's so weird to not even see us on the in the hunt graphic. Like, I can't remember the last time that happened either. It's probably the Moore year. It's just bizarre. Like, how are we not more in it than the Falcons at this point? You know, like, just wow.
Well, because they have, oh, they're up to 5 wins now. Wow. I mean, even the Bears are in the hunt column with their 4 wins.
I know.
And the Giants. Gross. This is gross.
Yeah. 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 I mean, we suck. We suck right now. There's just no other way to put it.
It feels good to at least own it.
Absolutely. That's not me. Like, there's always that guy, right? In some comments, not usually in ours, but you see them in the end of articles and things like that. You can't stop talking crap about my team. You're not a real fan. Go find a different team. Beep-a-doop-a-doo. Like the thinnest skin fan in the world. Like, oh, I can't be a realist and accept some criticism. Can't do that and still love the team. Nope. I've got to be all in. They're the greatest thing since sliced bread. Or I'm a Cardinals fan.
Positive vibes only.
Yeah, I can't stand that guy.
I try and be that guy.
What? I don't mind the positive vibes fan. What I hate is the positive vibes fan that tells you you're not a real fan.
Oh, right.
Because you see things a little differently and to get the hell out of the fandom, you know?
No, I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I'm glad to salvage a little bit of the season by being able to go to Houston here shortly.
Hey, enjoy the trip, bud.
I know. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Man, we screwed up that Vikings pick.
We didn't screw it up. The Vikings screwed it up.
The Vikings screwed that up.
I was listening to a little bit of it on the drive back from my last job. And I'll save this for my Better at Life because I just think it's this one thing is cool.
Okay.
So I'll glossing over. Put a pin in that.
Well, I don't have any strong feelings this week, especially after being a loss. So maybe we take this week to regroup and get back into picking a game next the week after this one.
Are you quitting on me? Are you quitting in the middle of the season?
I'm not quitting. I think we should take a break.
Because you had one loss of $12?
I don't like losing.
Well, nobody likes losing.
Look,
Brandon,
we're down to 40
for
after our big call of the Panthers over the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And then our weak call of the Lions plus 17.
Yeah.
We're at $48.97 in the balance column right now.
So like still way up when you're talking about tiny $12 bets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, all right, quitter.
Okay. What are you looking at this week?
I don't know. Give me some options. I haven't looked at the schedule this week because again, our team sucks. And so I'm kind of half checked out of the NFL.
That's why I was trying to gloss over this, but you seem adamant now calling me a quitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, give us something to root for.
Okay. Vikings are favored by 7.5 over the Lions.
Nope.
Bucks are favored by 11.5 over the Falcons.
Nope.
Dolphins are at home favored by 3.5 over the Giants.
Put a pin in that one.
Jets are at home and the Eagles are favored by 6.5.
Nope.
Bengals at home favored by 3.5 over the Chargers. Cardinals on the road against the Bears favored by 7.5.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, is Kyler back?
Yeah, he's supposed to be back this week. This is after their bye.
I don't love that.
I think D-Hop might be back too. Yeah, I wouldn't mess with that one. Colts favored by 8.5 over the Texans. That's a division game and it's in Houston.
I might take the Texans in 8.5.
You can take the Texans plus 15.5 points and $12 gets you 17. So that nets you $5.
You win $5? Okay, well, let's think on it. I haven't come up with a great one here yet.
The Rams favored by 12.5 over the Jags. Well, there's a get right game coming up for the Rams.
What would if you bet 12 on the Jags with those points? Like, what do you get?
It should just that's the money line, so that should just get you
12.
Get you 10.
So it'd be 24.
It nets you 10.
Nets you 10. I like that.
Yeah, 12 gets you 22.50.
I kind of like that. 12.5 is a monster number, and the Rams are in Strugglesville. And the Jags beat the Bills. Never forget. Never forget.
Never forget the Jags beat the Bills.
I kind of like that. That's my vote so far. But I'll listen to you. I mean, if you got other suggestions, I'm still all ears.
Yeah, you can actually go all the way up to 19.5 points.
What does that net you?
$5. Jaguars plus 19.5 over the Rams.
I kind of like 19.5. Jags plus 19.
We blew out the Jags.
By 19?
We beat the Jaguars 31-7 with Geno Smith.
Right.
And you're talking about a rookie going up against Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey.
Who, they haven't been game wreckers these last four games.
I don't like it.
Not with 19 points?
I don't like it.
I could easily see him losing by two scores, but I mean, three touchdowns more. I don't see it. They haven't gotten things going with OBJ. I think the loss of Robert Woods is gigantic for them. And like the chemistry hasn't been there with OBJ with a quarterback since Eli Manning's corpse used to play with him. So what makes me think that they're going to ever build on that? So then you just focus on Kupp and what else they got. They can't run the ball. That's finally caught up with them. They're not going to score a bunch of points.
I would take the Ravens straight up over the Steelers.
That's a legit bet.
Sure.
Sweet. Done. That right. That's a no-brainer.
Well, they're favored by 3.5. But if you rather than take the points,
right.
You can just say
pick them.
Just yeah. Do a pick them. Then 12 gets you nets you 6. So 12 and you win 18.
If you feel better about that one than you
I
do,
I feel way better
plus
about that one. The Steelers are terrible right now.
Okay. I will go with you on the Steelers are terrible and the Ravens are fine. So yeah.
Even though I mean. Lamar turned it over 4 times this last week, but
yeah, of course. Yeah. Sometimes that happens. It's that what he's going to turn it over 8 times in 2 games. I don't think so. He's a former MVP.
Yeah.
And it's Ben.
Is he even going to play? Is he, how messed
up is he?
He hasn't
played this entire season, even when he's been out on the field.
He has showed up. Is he going to show up behind center when they snap the ball to start this game?
I'm sure he does. Yeah.
Okay. What do you say? We say thank you to some of our members of the flock.
I love it.
Actually, we've got a new member of the flock, too. First, a big thanks to our executive producers, DCH, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, Kevin Watterson, and Brian Barlow. And coming in via Zelle, Steven comes in frequently via Zelle. Mm-hmm. He's one of the few. Came in with $50.12. So thank you to Steven.
Dude, appreciate it, man. All you guys, you are amazing and so loyal. And even through this tough year, you guys have just stuck with us. It's just, it's awesome, man. I don't know that other team-centric podcasts get that kind of loyalty from their listenership. I just don't know that they do.
Joseph Condon comes in with $20 via PayPal, says, "Dear Brandon, I was flattered that you chose to discuss on this last week's podcast my viewpoint on the Seahawks' poor performance and my prescription for corrective action. It dawned on me that with my newfound podcast fame, it would be wise to hire an agent, as it is just a matter of time before I'm fielding calls from CBS Sports producers, grown tired of Tony Romo's verbal diarrhea, or ESPN realizing Brian Griese can't count to two without a teleprompter. I am willing to gift your podcast 2% of any future earnings as an NFL color commentator. As a down payment, I'm making a contribution to join the flock today. Thanks for the career change boost. I have to get busy picking out my wardrobe for the inevitable Aaron Andrews interview to come. Thanks again, and go Hawks," from Joe Condon.
Joe, let's bet on Joe. I love it. I love this idea of 2%, because 2% of like $13 million a year is a lot of money. So for his upcoming color commentary broadcast contract.
Yeah. And how frustrating was it to listen to some of the things that Brian Griese was saying? And
did you listen to what Brian Griese said?
Yeah, he was saying
you listened to it, like actually process it? Because if you did, that's kind of on you.
It's because I recognize some of the things that he was saying about our offense and defense. Mm. And it's stuff that we'd talked about. And I can't even believe I'm agreeing with Brian Griese right now. I didn't even think it was him. I thought it was like some other dude who was knowledgeable about football. And then afterward, I saw that he was the one doing the color commentary in the Seahawks game. I was shocked.
A good way to consume a Brian Griese broadcast is every time he talks, you just have to turn his voice into a Charlie Brown teacher inside your head.
Normally, that's how I watch all Seahawks games. Like, I'll follow along in the Discord and people will be complaining about the commentary.
Yeah.
And I try and do the Charlie Brown thing with everybody.
Yeah. No, I don't pay a lot of attention unless they're just being super duper annoying. And like Thelma was 2 weeks ago. Yeah. It's just like, dude, shut the hell up. You're literally talking wrong.
Stupid Brian Griese making sense. That's where we're at this year.
Dude, I was going to start this podcast saying welcome to Bizarro World, because the Seahawks are 3-8. It is December 1st at 5,200 feet in the middle of the Sapphire Mountains in Montana, and it is 60 degrees.
Oh, I was going to ask you. I walked outside this morning with a jacket on.
Yeah, dumb.
And it was 55 degrees at 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
In December.
Brittany has a horrible penchant to burn things, as well as, well, with acid and with fire. She loves her some fire, and she got the wood stove going last night and put a log on right before bed. And I was like, babe, don't do that. And of course, we just roasted all night because it didn't get cold.
No, this is Bizarro December here in Montana, too.
Right. And Brian Griese makes sense for a week. There's the end of your, Bizarro year right there.
I want to go back to the real world.
Yeah, where the Seahawks are, 11 wins plus. There's snow on the ground, and Brian Griese is still a dum-dum.
Well, speaking of dum-dums, got a call from Dave Bloomquist.
Oh, I don't know.
That was a terrible transition.
Was
I love Dave Bloomquist.
Shots fired at Bloomy from calling in all the way from Hong Kong. Dang, man.
It was a terrible transition, and I couldn't help but go there because I love Dave.
Yeah, I love it too.
Hey, everybody. This is Boston Hawk. It's November 14th, 1994, and the Seahawks lost to Denver yesterday, and now we're 3-7. I don't know about this team. I've been following them for 20 years, and they're going nowhere. It's just disappointment year in and year out. Another loss, and I'm tired. I'm going to throw in the towel, but I don't know. I followed them for so long. I still wear my jersey when I watch the games. I still cheer hard for them. I still stand up for them. Maybe someday they'll be good. Maybe someday they'll give me a Super Bowl win. I don't know. I'm just dreaming right now. But anyway, it sucks to be 3-7. But maybe this will end someday. Go Hawks.
I love that Bloomy found a DeLorean and went back in time to send us that message. That was really cool. But
yeah, that didn't come through over the email. That actually came, I found through the space in the garage. I found this old answering machine. And it was on one of those little mini tapes.
Yeah. It was just sitting in the middle of your garage.
I thought, I should see what's on this. And it was Dave freaking Bloomquist.
Yeah. Boston Hawk at the time, right? You know, like instead of Hong Kong Hawk. Yeah, it does put some things into perspective, doesn't it? Like, I enjoyed that call, and we did forget to get it on the last pod, but it's just as poignant today. And,
nothing changed from a week ago. It's still Bizarro Seahawks world, or 1994.
Yeah. Or 1994. We didn't even get throwback uniforms this year to be excited about.
Next year, though, right? It's an option next year?
Who knows? We'll see.
A big thanks to Dave for calling in. Moving on to our Pick'em League standings. Looking at the top of the league with, let's see, who is at the top? Oh, so for week 12, Chell Seahawks got 11 picks correct and correctly picked the Seahawks as their team because we don't pick the Seahawks to lose ever. So yeah, 11 picks correct and at the top. So congratulations for week 12 to Chell Seahawks.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Pick'em League gives some people like a football life to live for still, so that's good.
Jason Gutierrez came in second place. Even with the allowed ability to pick Washington, the BFT finished with only 8 picks correct this last week.
And that's what happens. The football gods smite you.
I may be kicking out Van Nuys Hawks fan for picking against the Seahawks.
You're the commish. It's your prerogative, man.
No end to your prizes for Van Nuys Hawk fan. I'll say that right now.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I second your decision.
Okay.
Even though I have no power here.
I don't know where Van Nuys Hawk fan is in the overall standing. Let's see.
It doesn't matter anymore.
No, it doesn't. But I'm not even sure. Top 15 right now. So doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Unlimited Hawker, though, up at the top with 114 picks correct. Deep K Threat Calf with 111 points. That's a new name.
Yeah.
Honey Hole Hawk, Israeli Hawks, and Tuga Hawk. And what a Hasselbeck in at 111.
Nice.
Oh, and there's Chelsea Hawks in seventh place with the 11 points vaulting into the top 10.
Big moves.
Yeah, I need flowers to wags my Dixon, still in the top 10.
Still a great name, too.
Still a great name. On to do better and better at life.
All right, man. My do better this week is for NFL Game Pass because, number one, it's Wednesday, and no 22, all 22 film for me to watch to try to figure out what the hell's going on with this offense on third down. So that's annoying. But what's more annoying than that is that in the app, you pull up the game, there's different like tabs you can kind of scroll through, and one of them is called plays, quote unquote. And it's got all the plays listed by drive all the way down, right? Like,
yeah.
Why in God's green earth am I not able to click on the drive, see the play that starts that drive, first and 10, Seattle at its own 13, 13:22 left in the third quarter, press that play and have the video jump right to that freaking play so I can watch the drive. Instead of having to scroll through the entire freaking game and only get a little itty bitty preview scrolling thing at the bottom of the screen to see what the hell I'm scrolling to try to find the start of each of our freaking three and out drives. No, I had to sit and scroll through that right and left and back and forth and up and down and miss it all the time because I can't just click on the thing you've already got categorized out. NFL Game Pass. Do better.
I think, do you have to use the browser for it to have that function? I don't use it on the mobile, but it seems to work whenever I used it on the desktop.
I use the app thinking that,
all the things should work better on the app that's designed specifically for their product. Silly me.
That seems like a you problem.
Apparently.
My do better this week is for Thomas Carinati, Carinanti of musketfire.com, which is the fan-sided community for, I'm guessing, the Patriots. Oh, yeah, Musket Fire. Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be.
Starting with this headline, it's already whiny at the top. NFL's schedule change screws Patriots out of a full bye week.
Oh, God.
These whiny articles. This
This is why the entire NFL fandoms hate you, Patriot fans. We hate you.
It's because of stuff like this. Because you have a Monday night game and you have a Sunday game flexed to Saturday because of the holidays.
Oh, my stars.
And you whine about it shortening your bye week by one full day. Rival NFL fans take the time to joke each and every year about how the league favors the New England Patriots, from refs helping out their cause to the schedule constantly benefiting them. Everyone's always looking for an angle to devalue this franchise's success for the last two plus decades. But in 2021, with the odds already stacked against them for a multitude of reasons, the Pats are now losing out on the luxury of a full bye week during the inaugural 17-game season. And it's all because of ratings and money.
Wow.
Patriots fan, you don't get to point to this one thing as the NFL somehow being against you by flexing your schedule by one freaking day.
On a bye week. It's not even like on a regular week. Yeah,
not even on a regular week. On a bye week, they move your game from the Sunday to the Saturday to flex the schedule. And this is what you're going to go to as the NFL, showing that there's no favoritism here. Nothing to see here with favoritism, because the NFL is screwing us over by moving our game 24 hours in one direction after a bye week. Thomas Carinanti, do better.
Thomas is a crybaby.
Catfish! Yes.
I think we know that for a fact.
It kind of feels that way.
Yeah.
And not just because I read it in the crybaby catfish-ass voice.
No, just his whole tenor in being as a fan seemed to be that way. He might be a fine guy in real life, but his fandom sucks.
The Seahawks, they haven't been able to enjoy that kind of long-term success that the Patriots have. So maybe we'll just never be in that headspace ever of feeling like the NFL is on our side somehow.
One bad year after a decade that was preceded by a decade that was really great by one or two down years. I don't know. I think that
we've never had the refs on our side in that time period.
No. And we've never had the schedulers on our side. We've never had. Yeah. Give me a freaking break.
All right. On to better at life.
All right, man. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for SiriusXM Radio, which I ended up getting in the new truck. And
ooh, look at you, fancy radio man.
I know. I expected to think it was so-so, but I'm actually really enjoying it. And the main reason why is their sports section on the SiriusXM. So one of the things I was able to do and keep track of the entire drive through the Continental Divide, where there's no cell service, there's no nothing, anything like that, I was able to go to the sports play-by-play button and then to NFL play-by-play. And then the afternoon games, it was Vikings, Niners, Rams, whoever they were playing, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah.
The three games that were on. It shows all three little icons for each game, and it shows the score under each one of them as well. Oh. And it updates it as it goes. I could have sat and listened to them, but I just couldn't listen to the Niners or the Rams homers like talk on the broadcast. I just didn't want to listen to it, but I was able to keep up with the scores in real time and see our Vikings bet go down the tubes. So like it was actually really cool. I think it's a really neat feature, and I think they could probably do even a little bit more with it. But at this point, SiriusXM Radio, for my deal, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, that's
and it's not expensive.
I suppose not for what you get, and that you can, because anything NFL, it seems to be expensive, whether it's Game Pass or that sort of thing. But being able to keep up with all the scores and everything.
And not only that, like the idea that, you know, especially where I'm driving, there isn't a lot of cell service, a lot of, you know, radio coverage and that sort of thing. To have the satellite link up, you know, to get that. Now, it pops out here and there, you know.
Oh, yeah, going through the trees,
Or just really the more remote mountain passes or right on along the side of the gorge now and then. But, I mean, geez, I just think it's neat. It's been really, really nice for my travel experience, which I do, obviously, a lot of.
My Better at Life this week is for all the players taking part in the My Cause, My Cleats, and showing support to their various foundations. This is one of the cool things that the NFL does once a year. They allow the people to have their own colored cleats. I don't know why you can't do this all the time and just support, you know, various organizations that way. But this is the one time a year where you get to see all the different colored cleats and the designs, and they have different artists. You know, shoot, you see Pete Carroll with his plain white shoes normally, but during this time of year, he's out there supporting his favorite cause this year. You got Disley supporting Four Oceans. You got Lockett supporting Gathering Peace, which is a Tulsa, Oklahoma-based company. Of course, Russell Wilson with the Why Not You. You can go down the list and find out which of these causes mean the most to the players. And this time of year is a good time to pick and choose if you want to support one of their charities as well. To the NFL, to the players for taking part. Better at Life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, it's all pretty cool. And I think maybe the benefit of not doing it all season, but just for a week, is that people actually pay attention and it's a thing, right? So that you end up getting more attention for all of the charities rather than if they were wearing the same cleats week in, week out. Like, at what point do we stop talking about it?
Well, that's a good point.
That'd be my only guess as to why they do it.
Because now it's December and you see it featured and you're like, ooh, I wonder what their shoe is going to look like. I wonder what charity it's supporting to. Yeah, it makes it a bigger deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, on Monday Night Football, you'll get to hear Brian Griese try to describe one of these charities as if he knows what he's talking about. That'll be fun.
I always like the artistry of the shoes, too. And then usually, you know, they put them up for auction afterward. And it's fun to go at least look at them, not being able to afford them. But knowing that that money is going to a charitable cause, it's cool.
Yeah. It is cool. Good way to wrap up the show, man, after a loss to the football team.
Yeah. Still not over it, huh?
When am I supposed to get over it?
I mean, at some point, I should ask a 49ers fan how they deal with feeling like this consistently.
Right. Yeah. They're probably really good at it.
That's what I mean. Like, and at what point does the pain start to dull and you don't feel that same kind of passion that you felt after a Super Bowl winning season?
I think then you would have to assume that 49ers fans are something above subhuman and have actual human feelings. So
that's true. Well, maybe that's just a, you know, it's like Gollum in Lord of the Rings. Like,
sure.
After that many years, do you start turning into the kind of creature that the beatdown wears on you?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, again, you'd have to assume that the 49ers fan actually cares about their team.
But he was a human person, or a human-like person at one point, and then, you know.
And then started rooting for the Niners, and it all went downhill for him.
Yeah, and then can always talking about my precious.
Started living in a cave, and his hair fell out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're talking about his precious, those rings back in the 80s.
Exactly.
And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.